Welcome to a very special edition of the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. We're on the road this week in Milwaukee, Wisconsin for the Republican National Convention. What a week. We entered this convention just days after Donald Trump was shot and almost killed at a time when Joe Biden's political career could be dying. It's been incredible. We've had an opportunity to talk to a lot of the biggest names in politics and news and media from a lot of different perspectives. And of course, the delegation from California, the biggest delegation in the country. Here is our special that we've been working on featuring so many of their voices, as many as we could fit in over 7 days of 21-hour days. A big thanks to our photographer, Tony Butita, who's helped on all of this all week, and our editor, Debbie Kim, in putting all this together. So here is that special. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, the issue is the Republican National Convention.
Make America great again. Thank you very much.
This is the party of Trump.
He's here and he's here to fight.
I've never seen Republicans more united.
While the Democrats panic over President Biden.
For God's sake, new candidate.
At some point, Alex, this is going to penetrate.
Also coming up, the challenges and opportunities for the California GOP.
It's been a failure of the party to communicate.
The biggest names in politics and media on the ground in Milwaukee, as the issue is, starts right now.
Broadcasting across California, you're watching The Issue Is.
Welcome to a special edition of The Issue Is from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. The balloons are dropping. I'm Alex Michelson. This crowd is fired up as Donald Trump has united this party more than it has been in years. Trump's speech less than a week after he was shot in the ear and almost died.
I stand before you in this arena only by the grace of Almighty God. I'm not supposed to be here tonight. Not supposed to be here.
Trump then launching into familiar attacks often heard at his rallies. In a 1.5 hour long speech, the longest in convention history.
That right there is the prompter that Donald Trump is supposed to be following, but he's constantly going off script and riffing off the top of his head.
While some critics online slam the speech's length, most in the crowd here love it.
His passion for this country, he's unlike anybody that I know, and I know a lot of people.
Very inspiring, but very heartfelt. And I think that we're ready to go. We're ready to fight.
This joyful experience, quite a contrast from the horror of that shooting, which shook Trump supporters to their core.
What went through your mind when you saw those images?
Oh, my God. I just started praying, hoping, started crying. I said, they can't do that to him. They can't do that to him. They can't beat him, so they're going to kill him.
As Politico's Melanie Mason points out, for years Trump has said, they're not after me, they're after you. And I just happen to be in the way.
The hottest accessory now on the RNC floor is an ear bandage to sort of in solidarity of the former president and his injuries. I mean, I think it takes a president who already had the undying support of his fans and elevates it even further. And I think that you now have this kind of mythic story.
Trump's instinctual reaction to that shooting impacting this convention. Per Fox's Bill Malusian.
But you can tell they're going with kind of like a fight theme. That's, you hear fight, fight in the song. You heard Donald Trump say fight, fight, fight after he got shot on Saturday.
Former Speaker Kevin McCarthy says the shooting changed Trump.
I talked to him the day after the assassination attempt, and he would tell me about hearing the bullet. He knows he is very fortunate to still be on this earth right now, and I think he has a more reflective view.
How has this shooting impacted the race?
It's changed everything. Now we're going to get back to the basics.
Moving forward, what we would want is that everyone tone down the rhetoric.
This convention, unlike any other, according to the New York Times, Adam Negurney.
Most conventions are actually devoid of any suspense or real storyline, but there's a lot of stuff going on here.
One unknown as the week began, who would Trump pick as VP?
I officially accept your nomination to be Vice President of the United States of America.
Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, whose life story is portrayed in the best-selling book and movie, Hillbilly Elegy.
You got to decide you want to be somebody.
Vance, mostly raised by his grandmother, while his mother struggled with addiction.
Our movement is about single moms like mine, who struggled with money and addiction,
but never gave up. And I'm proud to say that tonight my mom is here.
Vivek Ramaswamy went to law school with Vance.
What do you want people to know about J.D. Vance?
I think he's a good man, actually. He's a good friend, a good father, a good husband, and he was a good classmate.
Yeah.
You know, I know him from a very different context. There's a lot of things that people could tell you about his politics. And the beauty is, he and I don't agree on 100% of things, but actually, he and I have also pushed each other to be the best version of ourselves, and I respect that about him. He's a real person. He's an original thinker. And I think we need more people like him in politics. I really do.
Vance is a former San Francisco resident, his wife growing up in San Diego.
He spent time in the Bay Area in the tech industry and the finance industry. I think he's a great voice for the next generation.
Donald Trump taking center stage once again at the Republican National Convention. Even though this was supposed to be J.D. Vance's big night, Donald Trump is by far the biggest star here.
Donald John Trump and Vance.
So we asked, why do the delegates love Trump so much?
You know what I like most in the last couple days? He wants to fight. You know, when he got shot, he said, I'm going to fight. I mean, that energized us.
He's America first. He loves our country.
Trump is America first.
Everything that he has gone through is really a reflection of what we've all gone through.
Newt Gingrich is the former Speaker of the House.
What is it about Donald Trump that has connected in such a visceral way?
The fact that he is the first truly courageous national leader who has taken on the entire establishment and has never backed off. I don't blame the left for being deeply anti-Trump because he does represent the end of their world. And so from their standpoint, this is sort of Armageddon.
Up next, some of the country's top journalists and commentators on Trump and on Biden. The Republican National Convention doesn't only attract the biggest names in politics, but also the biggest names in media, including the anchor of the highest-rated coverage by far, Fox's Bret Baier.
Have you ever seen a Republican convention so unified? Because you think about where Trump was when he came down that escalator back in 2015 and where we are now.
Yeah, no, I don't think I have. I think last Saturday's assassination attempt has a lot to do with it. Even the never Trumpers are kind of getting on board, or the skeptical Trump folks. I do think that the messaging that they have, it's pretty smooth, and the campaign seems to be running on all cylinders.
What do you make of the pick of J.D. Vance? What Trump is saying with that and what his role is going to be going forward?
I think he's just really comfortable with that pick, and he's really comfortable with Vance. He likes his story. He likes that he's a fighter. He likes that he goes on mainstream media shows and scraps it up. He's looking forward, I think, to a Vance-Kamala Harris debate. And I think he thinks it helps him in the Rust Belt states.
Of course, a Vance-Kamala Harris debate assumes that Kamala Harris is the VP pick.
True.
Which right now may not be the case.
We talk with Axios' Alex Thompson about President Biden's future.
There is significant concern within the party that Joe Biden is increasingly just around longtime aides who have great affection for him but are only telling him what he wants to hear. And so a lot of party leaders don't know what is going on, especially now that he has COVID. They definitely can't see him.
And of course, those aides would lose their jobs if he lost his job. And we know how close he is to his family. You've researched this as much as anybody, interviewed Hunter Biden. What's their role right now? What's their thinking?
I mean, Jill Biden used to be a reluctant political spouse. Now she's an enthusiastic political spouse. She wanted him to run in 2020 when he was still pretty old then. She's wanted him to run now. And my understanding from everyone I've talked to is they want him to fight.
You talked about, I guess, the importance of local news.
While in Milwaukee, USC Annenberg asked me to moderate a panel with Newsmax host Greta Van Susteren.
Where does Biden go from here?
Well, you know, Biden's got a heavy lift, and we'll see, you know, what rabbit they're going to pull out of the hat in the next couple of weeks.
For God's sake, new candidate. New candidate, let's try to win.
Cenk Uygur created the progressive streaming powerhouse, The Young Turks. He badly wants to beat Trump.
Where do you see the state of the race right now?
a disaster for the Democrats. So Joe Biden keeps doing interviews where he can't finish a sentence. He's rambling. He's mumbling. For God's sake, get him out of there. I mean, on debate night, I found a literal white towel and I threw it in. And I wish the Democrats would do that as well. Because, Alex, if we have a new ticket, we can still win this thing. In fact, I think we'd be favorites if we had a new ticket. But right now, with Biden, epic landslide. He's going to lose non-swing states. It's political malpractice to run him.
Do you realistically think there will be a new ticket? It feels like once that shooting happened, the momentum for that seemed to stop, at least publicly.
Yeah, I'm worried that the Democrats are cowards. And so instantly there were articles about how they were planning to surrender. And they're saying, well, you know, we'll just throw Biden out there to lose. And then all the careerists like Gavin Newsom and Gretchen Whitmer, et cetera, were like, well, we'll save ourselves for 2028. Wait, I thought democracy was on the line. Is there even going to be an election in 28? Apparently you think there is, so apparently you were lying to us all along. I actually am worried about democracy. I'm worried that there won't be a 2028 election. We got to win this election now. So get in there already. So now I know Joe Biden has to step down. And I know he might be having senility issues, and people dig in when they're senile, right? And they get more and more stubborn. By the way, the First Lady, what she's done is reprehensible. I've got a family member who's in a similar situation. I would never allow them to get embarrassed like that. I mean, I question whether she even cares about him.
Do you think that's going to happen?
I mean, you're asking me, do I think the Democrats will act rationally and with courage? And so that the odds are not good. But should they, if they cared about winning this election, it's a no-brainer. Why wouldn't you pick your strongest team? What a weird thing to say, like, well, I'd rather be polite to Joe Biden and lose democracy. I'd rather be polite to Kamala Harris and pick a weaker team. If she's the strongest candidate, she'll easily win an open convention. She's the vice president.
Jonathan Martin is Politico's senior columnist. We talked to him shortly after Congressman Adam Schiff, a close ally of Nancy Pelosi, ask Biden to drop out.
What they're trying to convey to President Biden is not only will you lose, but you will take down Democratic lawmakers with you. We'll lose the Senate. We probably won't take back the House. Please think about getting out of the race.
And so far, he's not listening.
No, they have not gotten through to him yet. But at some point, Alex, this is going to penetrate because no major party nominee in America can afford to have an intra-party coup leading up to his or her convention and expect to have a successful campaign. At some point, it becomes untenable. You have to have a unified party, and the Democrats clearly are not unified right now.
This party is, though, when we walk around here, this is the party of Trump. He has taken over everybody 100% behind him. What do you make of that as a political moment, and you make of this week?
The elephant has been replaced by the red MAGA hat. That is the logo of the modern Republican Party. And the upside of that for Republicans is they brought new voters into the process. Working class, whites, Hispanics, African Americans who are voting for the first time, voting period for the first time, and supporting Republicans. The downside is that they've alienated a lot of Americans, too, who used to vote for Republicans. So, you know, there's obviously a double-edged sword to it. I think it's going to be a competitive campaign this fall. President Trump is despised by millions of Americans, but beloved by millions of Americans. So he's got a high floor and a low ceiling in political parlance. And I think that's bad news if you're a Democrat, because he's never going to fall below 46% nationally. And in battleground states, it's probably a point or two higher, Alex. And if you're running in a three-way or a four-way race and you're getting 47, 48% of the vote in a state, you're in pretty good shape.
Joe Garofoli writes about politics for the San Francisco Chronicle.
At this point, based off of everything that you're hearing, can he continue as the nominee?
No. He cannot. He's lost all the things you need to be a president, to run successfully for president. The donors, the grassroots, the confidence of the top officials of the Democratic Party, and the voters. We saw a poll that came out the other day that said 65% of Democrats want him to get out.
Clay Travis is the founder of OutKick and a conservative talk show host.
Democrats are in complete panic. because Trump has taken control of this race. I think in the wake of what happened on Saturday, the assassination attempt, he solidified that he is a warrior and that he is willing to fight, as he literally said, for everything that he believes. I think Biden only had two real issues to be able to make an argument on in the first place. One was this democracy angle. I think this knocks that out of the park. Now he's got abortion, and I think Trump has handled the abortion issue well. And if you look at what happened at the border, if you look at crime, if you look at the Middle East and also what's going on in Europe, Biden has failed everything that he has touched.
Do you think there's like a cultural realignment happening in the country?
Yeah, I do. I think that's a big part of what's going on is a lot of young people who maybe grew up in the Trump era are challenging what they might have been told by mainstream media. I think mainstream media, to a large extent, has destroyed its reliability, its trustworthiness. And as a result, I think what you're starting to see is so many people making their own determinations.
Michael Knowles of the Daily Wire invited me to be a guest on his show the same day he interviewed Donald Trump Jr.
The shocking news on Saturday of the attempted assassination has unified the party in a way that the party has never been unified in my entire lifetime. And I think has made people recognize that, perhaps Trump isn't an existential threat to the democracy, as Biden has said he is. Perhaps Trump isn't the reincarnation of Adolf Hitler, or doesn't model his career after Hitler, as Biden has said he has. And the proof of that is, if Trump were Hitler, and Trump were posing an existential threat to the country, no one would be wishing him well. You know, all of the statements from Biden, from AOC, from everyone, they say, oh, we're so happy that you're okay, that you're doing well. You wouldn't say that about Hitler. I wouldn't say that about Hitler, at least. And so I think it's taken the air out of the sails of really the only line of the Biden campaign, which is this guy will destroy the whole system of government.
We know there are a lot of folks in California who maybe don't have a lot of interactions with many conservatives in their daily life. Can you give us some insight into why the Republican and conservative base loves Trump so much?
I think personally, he just seems real. It's kind of funny that a rich kid, billionaire, reality TV star, who's dated supermodels and flown around in a jumbo jet for his whole adult life, that he would seem so real. But he does, and I actually think a lot of Democrats would admit that too. He doesn't recite polished political lines. He only really earnestly ran for office once, and he got the biggest office in the land. And then he faced as much pushback from his own party as he did from the other party, just about.
And do you think that this is about issues, or that this is something bigger than trade policy or tax rates?
The issues are necessary but not sufficient to get Trump over the finish line. Even beyond the issues, they're going to see one candidate who was nearly dead, but who looks very much alive, and one candidate who, though still speaking, looks dead.
Hmm. And speaking of dead, the Daily Wire in California, we saw you guys used to be based in California. You moved to Nashville a few years back because of some of the frustrations with what was happening in the state. Are you happier now?
I miss three things. I miss my old cigar shop. Okay. I miss the weather, and I miss going on your show. That's it. That's all I miss. Everything else is great in Tennessee.
I was hoping you were going to say you miss coming on The Issue Is. Yeah.
Really just the brownies and the cookies you give to your guests.
Yeah, my mom makes every week. Michael, thank you for having us. Really appreciate it. And anything else you want to add?
I have nothing left to add until I come on your show next time I go back to California.
Okay, we'll see you then. It's a date. Thanks, Michael. And
up next, the struggles and opportunities for the California Republican Party.
Welcome back to a special edition of The Issue Is. We are at the Harley-Davidson Museum in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where they have an ice sculpture of a Harley for the California delegation. The delegation meeting together at several different events throughout the week, all of them with one thing in common.
This delegation backs Trump 100%.
People want a fighter for them. People want to know that somebody's going to fight for them and fight for America.
He's just a man of value and tremendous integrity, and is going to be our next president.
California has the largest delegation here at the RNC, over 300 members. The challenge, though, for the state party is to do better statewide. They haven't won a statewide election in California since 2006.
The state of the California Republican Party is still what it's been for the last two decades, which is impotent.
Joe Garofoli writes for the San Francisco Chronicle.
I don't see it changing anytime soon. They have not really changed their policies or their stances on a lot of key issues over the years.
Bill Asaley represents Riverside County in the Assembly.
We are in the supermajority in California. I think it's because of it's been a failure of the party to communicate to everyday voters in California. So the party needs to do a better job of articulating the issues that resonate with voters.
Jessica Milan Patterson chairs the state party and says they are making some progress.
I think you're seeing that turn happening here in California. Since October of last year, we've seen 160,000 new registered Republicans. In that same time, Democrats have lost 106,000. Decline to states or no party preference went down 115,000.
Riverside County Sheriff Chad Bianco is strongly considering running for governor as a Republican.
The people that don't vote, I think, are really the problem. That's 60% of California that doesn't vote. And I think we're finally realizing that, well, things do concern me now, and I think I better start paying attention and getting more involved.
Despite all the Trump love here, Trump has lost California in two straight presidential races by around 30 points. Jim Brulte is the former chair of the state party.
John McCain and Mitt Romney lost California by over 20 points. But the last time Donald Trump was on the ballot in California, we picked up five congressional seats in California. So, because he drives turnout.
Congressman Ken Calvert is here. He represents Riverside County in Congress and is locked in a tight reelection race against Democratic challenger Will Rollins.
Some might say, stay away from Trump. You know, some other congressional members are doing that here. Why lean into it?
Well, I haven't. President Trump's been a friend and somebody I've supported. I think he's been great for the economy. I think that we can look back and see what he did then and look forward to what he's going to do in the future to get this economy working.
Daryl Issa represents a seemingly safe Republican district in San Diego County. He's working to elect more Republicans statewide.
I'm a proud San Diegan. We in California as Republicans, we're not giving up. California matters, and the principles that are making states like Tennessee and Florida and other states succeed can be brought back to the state that gave us Ronald Reagan, and we can be successful again, too.
Up next, we wrap things up from Wisconsin. You're watching The Issue Is.
As Donald Trump and his family wrap up the Republican National Convention, it's our time to wrap up this show. A big shout out to editor Debbie Kim for putting this all together and photographer Tony Butita for 21-hour days all week long. We're going to do all this again at the Democratic National Convention next month in Chicago, but we have no idea what's going to happen there. Thanks for watching this week. I'm Alex Michelson reporting this week from Milwaukee.